Hi there, it's Matt here, and welcome back to the podcast, and welcome back to another AMA episode, Ask Me Anything episode. I am, as always, joined by the extraordinary, the first-rate, the marvelous, the outstanding, the phenomenal, the remarkable, the special, the prodigious, the world-class entity that is Dr. Etty Bensimone. Etty, welcome back.
You're too kind, Matt.
Only truths. Okay, so I think we have had, once again, a lot of interest, a lot of questions, and I will just let you take the wheel and drive. Off you go.
Wonderful. Yeah, we have a great set of questions today. And the first one, we're going to shoot for the stars. And we're going to talk about, or people are asking about, the influence of lunar cycle on sleep patterns and dreams.
Very nicely done in terms of segue now. Okay, let me see if I can bring us back down to Earth, with a bump in terms of my vernacular. It's a really interesting question. And I think sometimes we've spoken on this show before a lot about the link between sleep and emotional regulation. And when sleep gets short, we become more emotionally erratic and unpredictable. And I've often thought how that relates to this idea in movies and common culture that when the full moon is out, people get a little bit emotionally different. And I always thought, well, what is happening there? And it turns out there have been, surprising to many people listening, several decades of research that have looked at the question of what happens to our sleep, if anything, as the lunar cycle changes. In terms of the overall headline, the findings have painted shades of both affirmation and doubt. Let me see if I can explain. There has been a substantial body of studies suggesting probably a subtle but certainly measurable impact of lunar phases on our sleep. I think probably one of the earliest that was published was back in the early 1990s. It was by a great sleep researcher, Monk, and his colleagues. And what they described was a slight decrease in total sleep time. And I think causing that was an increase in the amount of time that people spent awake at night around the full moon phase. So it suggested that there was something going on. We don't sleep as well. We spend more time awake. Then, gosh, fast forward probably 30-ish years, there was, I think, probably one of the more seminal studies in the field that was published in a very reputable journal called Current Biology. And what they reported was, again, a delay in the onset of sleep. So people found it more difficult to fall asleep, and they reported a reduction in the amount of REM sleep around that full moon phase. Now, I could be wrong. That may have just been in men. I will have to check. But I think what those findings started to lend credence to was this popular belief of restless nights when we're bathed in the full moon. And then people were saying, if that's the case, what could be the underlying biological mechanisms based on the potential influence of the lunar cycle? We don't know, but there have been several hypotheses. I think one that's been proposed, which in my mind at least may have some evolutionary merit, is that around the full moon phase, there is an increase in light, moonlight. And that full moon phase, with that increase in light at night, which is usually non-typical, there would be a suppression of melatonin. And as folks know, it's a key hormone for regulating our wake-sleep cycles. So that was one hypothesis. Another hypothesis, which I think is probably a little bit more hand-waving, was that there are some kind of gravitational variations associated with the moon phase position that could subtly affect biological processes, including hormones that may regulate sleep parameters. I still think we're very unclear on the underlying mechanism, but in truth, I've got ahead of my skis already here. You'll recall that I mentioned there were shades of affirmation, but there was also shades of doubt. Not all research paints the moon as a sleep disruptor. Several studies have, in fact, tried to ratify those findings, and they failed to find any significant association. I think probably the first rebuttal of that suggestion was in 2017, and I know this more recent literature, and I'll explain why, that was published in a journal called Sleep Medicine. They analyzed sleep data from over 8,000 individuals. And what did they find? They found no clear association whatsoever between the lunar phases and sleep duration, sleep quality, or sleep efficiency. Then in 2021, in a really good journal, Science Advances, there was a similar report of no measurable difference in sleep onset or the duration of sleep across those lunar phases. And around that time too, we, particularly one of our former fantastic postdoctoral fellows, Dr. Raphael Vallette, we decided to gather together thousands of nights of sleep to see if we could repeat these analyses. And similar to those latter two studies, we found zero effect of the lunar phase. So I would say that in conclusion, regarding the question of whether it does impact human sleep patterns, it's still very open. I think it's ripe for further investigation. And there's been some literature in this regard. I think it was in that Current Biology paper that I mentioned earlier. They were suggesting that there could be differences on the basis of men versus women. And so if you split it on that basis, maybe you do find an effect in one class versus not, or males and females, I should say. Or there could be other influences. Could it be age group, that there are certain ages during which we are more vulnerable or less vulnerable? So just because you don't find it on average doesn't mean that I'm ready yet to discount it. I just don't think there is a very clear binary answer. I know it's very unsatisfying for people listening because they want a strong yes or they want a strong no. Often science just hasn't got there yet in terms of these questions. And this is one of those examples. What's your reading, Etty? Because I know that when we were doing this work in our sleep center, we'd reviewed some of the papers and looked at it. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wanted to maybe offer another explanation why we're not finding the effects. Is that perhaps if we think about the moonlight as affecting melatonin, could it be that this was more influential when we didn't have electricity, when we were mostly spending our time outside and only going into, let's say, our cave when we're ready for bed? Perhaps during those times, it did have more of a stronger effect. And now when we're mostly indoors, electricity, blinds, maybe it just washes out. Do you think?
I think that's certainly possible. It was definitely one of the things that I'd been considering when we found null findings. For example, I wanted to look to see, is there any weather information that we could find on the basis of where the individuals, and we'd looked at thousands of individuals, on those specific nights, could we understand whether it was a cloudy night or whether it was a non-cloudy night? Because therefore that would change the looks of the light from the moon. And that's one idea. And I think it fits, it's slightly orthogonal, but it's related to your notion that maybe during evolution, there was a time when we were influenced, but now no longer. But what is interesting is that regardless of my hypothesis, or the one, I think the delightful one you put forward, both of those would argue against the gravitational force, because whether we're indoors or we're outdoors, whether it's cloudy or whether it's not cloudy,
that's true.
That shouldn't change the hypothesis of the gravitational force. So to me, I think that whole notion of these very modest gravitational changes probably discounts
like
that.
Human tides.
Yes, exactly. And I think there is no evidence of a gravitational tide that tugs and pulls sleep back and forth with the waxing and waning of the moon. So
I have to say that the Jewish calendar is actually based on the moon. And every time there is a big holiday, it is around the full moon. Once I did a little trip in the desert during the night, during a full moon, and suddenly you realize why it is that way, because you can really enjoy your evening, your festivities, without electricity when it's a night of full moon. It makes a lot of difference.
Isn't that fascinating how human beings will just, if we are dislocated from this thing called modernity and we revert back to our natural tendencies, that there are so many systems and tools that were used very cleverly by human civilizations in the past. When opportunities like electric light were not available, they were so clever. They came up with all sorts of smart ways to get around that. Yeah. I mean, okay, fair enough. Edison and his electrified society, and obviously debate about whether he invented the light bulb, but he certainly was, I think, a huge influence on electrifying the night for the first mm-hmm. time in human history. But we found clever ways to non-electrify light the night. One of the partners of today's podcast is Levels. Levels is a cutting-edge product that allows you to track your blood sugar moment to moment during the day. And for someone like me, when I wake up, I can track and go back and look at my moment to moment blood sugar throughout the night as well. It has the best sensor technology in the industry. I started using Levels 2 years ago now. Not because I was struggling with any health conditions, but I really wanted to understand how my body responded to what I was eating. I had no clue. And understand that moment to moment, and also how it impacted my sleep, and how my sleep, or when I wasn't doing well with my sleep, for example, during travel and jet lag, how that was impacting my blood sugar. It was stunning regarding when my sleep was not great. My blood sugar control, despite me being usually very rigorous in what I was eating in terms of the very same things, radically different outcomes on the basis of sleep. It was such a great insight. The other thing that surprised me, though, that was hugely useful, I discovered that there were foods that are generally considered to be safe for blood sugar, but for me personally, they would actually spike my blood sugar, not in a good way. But then in the opposite direction, there were foods that when I was out to dinner with friends, and some of those friends also had Levels, it would spike their blood sugar levels. But for me, didn't change a thing. It was so fascinating to learn. It has been hugely helpful for me. I say that very genuinely. If you want to try out Levels, you can go over and you can get a discount. You can get 2 free months of Levels when you sign up. So go to levels.link/Matt Walker. So again, that is levels.link/Matt Walker. And I hope it's as meaningful for you. Again, levels.link/Matt Walker. Maybe next question.
It's about gravity or weighted blankets and how do they impact sleep?
Oh, good question. I would say, it's not a question that I get asked very, very frequently, but I would certainly say that it's not infrequent in its occurrence. Weighted blankets, which people should know also come under the term gravity blankets. I think there are some folks out there who call them also bead blankets, perhaps too, but for the most part, people say weighted blanket or gravity blanket. They've received a lot of attention, and no one can see me right now, but I'm doing sort of attention in air quotes, as a potential tool for improving sleep, or at least that's what the hype suggested when they first came out. And if you'd asked me this question 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, I'd say that there is little to no data that offers any meaningful insight. Either way, it didn't suggest that it necessarily harmed your sleep, didn't necessarily suggest that it helped your sleep, or neutral. Now, however, it turns out things are quite different. Perhaps I can just rattle through a couple of the questions that come to mind, if that's okay, Etty, and perhaps in no necessarily clear order, although I'm trying to do
no numbers.
Bucketing. But yeah, I know. Well, okay, here we go. First,
that's actually, the bad
first,
love.
Let me start with some background. I should probably explain what are weighted blankets or gravity blankets for folks who don't know, and they may not do. But these blankets typically weigh anywhere from probably around 5 to 30 pounds, I think. And they are essentially designed, they didn't appear initially for the purpose of sleep necessarily, but they were designed to distribute a gentle but even pressure across your body. And I say it didn't really come from sleep to begin with, because the concept is actually based on something called deep touch pressure therapy, or DTP for short. And that's a therapy that was looking into aspects of stress and anxiety and trying to look to see whether pressure either applied through some kind of a wrapped blanket. It's the idea that some people say that when you swaddle a baby, it calms a baby down because there's this sense of wrapped pressure, and that wrapped pressure, or sometimes it can be in the therapy, sometimes it can be consensual hands sort of pressing on an individual, not harshly pressing, but just gentle, light pressure can produce just this quiescent, calming effect. So that was sort of the premise coming into it. And what of the data? So second, because whenever you start, if you're writing, students out there, scientific students who are writing, I see this all the time. If you start your opening paragraph with first, comma, there always has to be a second. And sometimes if you look, there is no second. So there should never have been a first to begin with. So if I've said first, I need to add a second. So second, let me come on to the impact of sleep, or the question of sleep. There was a great study, gosh, and it's probably one of the most cited studies, I think. And it came from Ekholm in 2020-ish. I think it's probably one of the most definitive studies in this area. As I said, ask me 5 years ago or 10 years ago, not too much evidence now, better. The study was designed to essentially evaluate these weighted blankets. And again, the weight was right around a typical significant weighted blanket. And what they wanted to do was look at this type of deep pressure stimulation at night in patients with insomnia. And they wanted to look to see not just whether it helped with their insomnia, but it also helped with some of the sleep-related problems that they were suffering from, things such as major depression or even bipolar disorder, or also what we call generalized anxiety disorder. And they looked at, I think it was around about maybe 20 patients, and all of these patients had problematic insomnia. And they were recruited through what we call an affective disorders clinic, meaning that you have some kind of a challenge with your mental health mood. And they compared the use of the weighted blanket to a control blanket. And I'll come back to why that's relevant in a second, because in these studies, you typically like to have some kind of a control, a placebo group, and the placebo group was just a standard blanket. They measured, as I said, these different outcomes on daytime function, particularly mood and mental health, and they also measured their sleep. The way that they measured their sleep wasn't really using the sort of spaghetti monster high-grade equipment that we use at the sleep center here at Berkeley. They used a scale, and it's a scale that has been well-validated for insomnia, and it's called the Insomnia Severity Index, or the ISI, Insomnia Severity Index. And they wanted to use that scale, validated, to see if, firstly, did the weighted blanket have any benefit to the insomnia symptoms across the duration of the study? And sure enough, what they found was that the weighted blanket group, if you looked at the response rate, and when I say response, I mean how many people responded beneficially to using one of these two blankets, and beneficially meaning that their insomnia severity index decreased. What they found was that in the people who were using the weighted blanket, there was almost a 60% response rate. In other words, almost 60% of the individuals responded beneficially by way of a reduction in their insomnia severity ratings relative to the control blanket, in which only 5% seemed to show any degree of a response. That was point number one. Then they looked to say, okay, once we've finished the study and those people who have remitted, who have responded, how many people stay in remission? And in fact, what they also found was that about 40% of the individuals who were using the weighted blanket and continued to use the weighted blanket maintained the insomnia wellness, meaning that they did not relapse back into insomnia, versus only about 5% of the control group who remained non-relapsed and who did not go back to having the insomnia. So it was a very nice study in that sense. And I'll come back to sort of some of the daytime functioning in a second. The caveat I would note is that with a placebo, you tend to like the placebo not to be known, meaning that when you take a sugar pill versus a drug, you know, there's usually no taste difference between the two of them. The pill size is the same, the color is the same, and you don't know which you're getting. So you don't have any awareness. Now, that's not really true with this study because it's very obvious if you have a weighted blanket versus a normal blanket. So there is some bias there to keep in mind. I think it's important. What I did find really interesting, though, in this study, which I'm just remembering now, there was a twist, and it was a crossover design, meaning that those who were in the control group at some point during the study, if they'd started off in the control group, they switched over to the weighted blanket. And sure enough, once they switched over to the weighted blanket, they got almost identical benefits that the weighted blanket first group actually did too. Finally, I should note that for both of those groups, when they started using the weighted blanket, whether it was the first session of the study or whether it came after the control and they did it as the second part of the study, when they got their sleep straight, when their insomnia was reduced, lots of other things improved. Things like their depression rates and their anxiety rates, all of those things started to decrease. I think overall that study is quite indicative that in general, if you look at most of the studies, if we take kind of the bigger picture view and I just summarize rather than making this any longer than it has to be, the majority of similar studies report a similarly positive influence on sleep. And for the most part, however, those studies either contain self-reported sleep quality, which doesn't mean that it's not necessarily a valid measure, just trying to describe the way that they measured sleep, because it's important that I tell you as a scientist the way that these studies are done. It's either self-reported sleep quality or it's us scientists using objective questionnaires like the insomnia severity that have been well validated. I don't think there are many studies right now that have really done high-grade, high-level definition recording of sleep as we would do in the sleep laboratory to assess what is the difference for different sleep stages, what about the electrical quality of their sleep. I should also note, by the way, that there are some studies that have not found a benefit. So therefore, it's not as though it's consistent across every single study. The other twist that I should note, if you almost develop a dose response curve, and I don't think anyone's done this systematically, but I have done this when I was looking at the data for a reason that I won't bore people with when I went deep on this. Overall, the heavier the weighted blanket, the greater the sleep benefit that seemed to occur. And so some of the failed studies could be because the weighted blanket was just not weighty enough, as it were. By the way, now I'm saying about that dose response that the heavier the blanket, please, folks, don't start doubling down to the extreme where you're now taking 2 50-pound blankets and you've got 100 pounds on you. Because then there's going to be on the news, there's going to be a full rescue team was called up because there was an individual trapped under a 300-pound, concrete 300-pound weighted blanket after listening to the Matt Walker podcast. Please don't do that. So, what about children then? The majority of the studies that have focused on weighted blanket use, sleep, and kids have focused almost exclusively on kids with ADHD. And for logical reasons, due to the prediction that the calming effect of these blankets could help calm those kids, because what we see in ADHD, and in fact, mental note, I need to do a podcast on sleep and ADHD. I think it's long overdue. It's an important topic. And in fact, I should probably not just do it myself. I have an expert in mind, in fact, that I would love to reach out to, and I will, because this is a very important topic. But here we're speaking about weighted blankets. It's very logical. Children with ADHD have significantly more sleep problems. They have harder time falling asleep. They have a harder time staying asleep. They will often also feel not necessarily refreshed or feel good about the sleep in the morning. And this is based on both child report and also parent report in terms of their sleep. So obviously, this is an area where the weighted blanket concept of trying to produce a calming influence on the brain and also on the body has come in. What they have found overall is that weighted blankets do seem to both improve the quality of sleep for children with ADHD, and it also seems to result in a benefit in the daytime functioning of those children. And I think perhaps one of the best studies, it probably came out about 4 months ago in 2023, and it was by Barrick, B-A-R-I-C, blanking on the first name. Anyway, it was a very recent study in 2023, and they didn't necessarily do a proactive study where they designed a study. What they did was go back and examine and follow up data of 85 individuals. And by the way, less than 50 of them, 48 of them were children, and the rest were adults. So they looked at these individuals, all of which who had either a diagnosis of ADHD or ASD, autism spectrum disorder. And those individuals were prescribed essentially a weighted blanket. The study found that using the weighted blanket improved the abilities of those individuals to naturally fall asleep. Second, they also stayed asleep more soundly. So they had greater what we call sleep continuity, which is simply to say that what are the chances that that individual not only falls asleep easily, but also can stay asleep throughout the night? So falling asleep improved. They fell asleep more quickly. They stayed asleep with a higher probability, and they reported being more relaxed during the day. What was also interesting is the consequence, and this is why I think there is now some pretty good, I think, causal evidence, and I'll let the expert that I hope to get on the show tell me whether that's right to say, that there is a link between the sleep disturbance that we see in ADHD and some of the symptomatology that we see in ADHD. And conversely, perhaps some of the medication that is used regarding perhaps only amplifying the sleep disruption that naturally occurs because of the disorder. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. The reason I'm mentioning that, though, is when you improve sleep here by way of the weighted blanket, you help improve the morning and evening routines of the children. In other words, it helped them more easily prepare for sleep and get down for sleep, which I know is an issue for parents with children who have ADHD. And also it helped with the waking up regimen too. And they were more organized. They were more willing to sort of have an organized wake up routine. There was another study that looked maybe back in 2021. Again, this is how recent you can see that the data is. And it was Larson and colleagues, Ingrid Larson, and they looked into how parents rated the experience of using weighted blankets for the sleep problems that they had expressly stated were occurring in their children with ADHD. And they conducted interviews with a sample. I don't think it was a very big sample. I think it was probably less than about 30 children. These children, as I said, they had both ADHD and they had described sleep problems described by the parents to the clinician, because some of these kids are obviously not going to be erudite and being able to sit down and say, well, I have this specific syndrome of insomnia, this feature, of course. So parents can observe this and they report it. So they had a group, children with ADHD who had sleep problems, and they looked at an intervention. And they used the weighted blanket, and they used it for 16 weeks. And they did some sleep surveys, and they looked at how those sleep surveys and the functioning of those kids was different at the end of the 16 weeks of using the weighted blanket relative to before using it. So in other words, it's an intervention study, and you're comparing the effects that have occurred either across the duration or by the end of the study relative to the baseline at the start of the study. Sure enough, there were a number of fascinating results. What am I about to do? I'm about to number my points. Okay, here it is.
It's part of your magic. Just, you know, accept it.
Diplomacy. You should actually, you're almost like the Kofi Annan of the United Nations. Kofi Annan. You're so diplomatic. What a wonderful gentleman pass. But number one, here's what they found. They achieved more satisfactory sleep as a consequence of using the weighted blanket for 16 weeks. And that included improved ability to fall asleep. Again, improved continuity of sleep, meaning that they stayed asleep. The kids were able to stay asleep longer. And what they also described was that just the sleep routine in general, starting the sleep routine in the evening, moving the child through that routine, getting them into bed, getting them settled, getting them to sleep, all of that was reported as being easier when the weighted blanket was being used. And by the end of the 16 weeks, that was one of the benefits. So that's point number one. They're falling asleep faster, they're staying asleep, and just the general act of trying to get your child into bed and get them down, which can be challenging for kids and kids, including with ADHD, was better. That appeared to be associated with, and again, it wasn't necessarily a causal study, but it seemed to be associated with an increased overall report of well-being. And what do I mean by that? And they broke this amorphous term of well-being down. What it meant was that the parents reported that the children had increases or improvements in just a relaxed state. They reported reduced levels of anxiety in their child. And finally, the third point is that they reported improvements in what they described as family functioning. And the way that they described that was the child's participation in leisure activities, in family activities, but also the reported benefits for the participation of the child when they were in school itself. So all of this is tentative. I don't mean it to be a discussion that should result in parents with children who have ADHD necessarily rushing out and buying weighted blankets, simply that to date, the evidence, and you can see how recent this evidence is. I'm describing studies from 2021 or 2023. These are just a smattering of studies that do not justify any recommendations, certainly not from people like me. It's simply to say that the evidence, I would say, is trending towards the suggestion, talk about qualifiers, trending towards the suggestion that weighted blankets may help improve the sleep of children and adults with ADHD, because one of the studies also included adults. But what we need is randomized, good placebo-controlled trials to really have solid grounds of such a claim. What that placebo is, I don't really know, because it would be so hard to develop an intervention that would be not a weighted blanket. Similarly confusing enough to think that it could be a weighted blanket as a reasonable placebo.
Yeah, it's kind of like psychedelic research where you can
exactly really that's a great comparison. It's very, I mean, I think there was a great New Yorker cartoon, and it was a guy in a hospital waiting room, and it said over the desk, it said something like ketamine clinic or psychedelic clinic. And he was sitting there in the waiting room, and he was seeing all of these angels dance around in this circle above his head. And he just looked at the person next to him and said, well, I guess I'm not in the control group, am I? And so I think it's probably the same way with these weighted blankets a little bit, not that anyone will be seeing visions of angels circling. A partner of today's podcast is an alternative to coffee that I've been using myself. I've mentioned before on this podcast, I am pretty sensitive to caffeine. Don't get me wrong, I've spoken a lot about caffeine and coffee, but for me, I just don't do well with it, particularly in terms of my sleep. I'm one of those sensitive people. And I also know people who just don't enjoy the jittery anxiety that caffeine can give you, or the caffeine crash that comes. So if you would want a similar beverage, a jumpstart to the day, as it were, you can try something called Mud Water, and it is spelled M-U-D-W-T-R. That is M-U-D-W-T-R, Mud Water. Mud Water is a popular coffee alternative, and you may have heard about it. It contains something called cacao and different blends of mushrooms. And it gives me this really fascinating, it's sort of just a natural lift without the downside or the caffeine crash, you know, that kind of that energy drop. And I found it to be very pleasant. I will have it in the mornings. There are several flavors that you can try. And as someone who is very health conscious, just to keep in mind, it is 100% USDA certified, organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It's also vegan and it's also kosher. Speaking of the good folks over there at Mudwater, they have agreed to do a special offer for you folks listening. If you go to mudwater.com/Matt Walker, that is mudwtr.com/Matt Walker, you can get a free frother, but perhaps as a greater incentive, they'll give you $20 off your purchase. So shamelessly, I've used that same code. I don't take free product, but I am happy to save and put $20 back in my pocket. If you want to try it, go over to Mudwater, that is mudwtr.com/Matt Walker. So mudwater.com/Matt Walker, and you can get your free frother and your 20% off. That is mudwtr.com/Matt Walker. Anyway, the final thing I should note, which is something that we always love to do on the show and we do very thoroughly as scientists, comes back to the question of how and why. This podcast, I hope, goes always into the mechanism. So how do weighted blankets help? Biologically, what are they doing that could improve sleep? And this is where I think there was another fascinating and recent study that was led by Eliza Meth, and it included one of my favorite sleep scientists who I admire so much. He does such remarkable work. I need to have him on the podcast as well. And that is Jonathan Sedernus, wonderful scientist. So their study came out, and it came out just last year. Again, see how recent all of this stuff is. And the study, it involved just a small sample of individuals. It was 26 healthy adults. So not a large study, but it was conducted very precisely, as is Jonathan's nature when I read his science. They investigated the potential of weighted blankets to orchestrate sleep by delving into the world of what we call the endocrine response to these weighted blankets, which is just a fancy way of saying they looked to see if these weighted blankets changed certain hormonal pathways. And the findings suggested a very nuanced interplay between two hormones that may explain why these weighted blankets may help sleep. And they are hormones that we've spoken about before on this podcast. Here's what they did in their study very quickly. The participants spent one night either under a weighted blanket, and it was 6 kilograms. I'm still European in mind, so I can't quite figure out what that is in pounds, but someone will know. Or they used a very light blanket. So again, there's that issue of a good placebo, and it's tough to do it. And the rest of it was standard. They used exactly the same identical sleep environment. It was very controlled to ensure as much of a fair comparison outside of the two blanket conditions as they could. And here's what they found. Etty, I'm going to resist numbering. I'm not going to number, resist numbering. Here are the key points as to what they found. One of the key points that they found was that melatonin, that hormone that we've spoken about, which helps timing of sleep. And remember, these people were able to fall asleep more easily. They seem to have better signaling of when they should be sleeping, whereas before perhaps it was erratic. And here, the healthy adults, by the way, we've moved on from children with ADHD. These are healthy adults, young adults. They found that the levels of melatonin actually increased significantly with the weighted blanket. I should note that they measured that using saliva, which is one very valid way of doing it. Another way is using blood, but here they were using saliva. And what it suggested is that there's something about a weighted blanket that produces a stimulatory effect on this sleep timing related hormone that seems to be key for the onset of sleep. And in case in point, jet lag is a very demonstration where you don't get an appropriate timed melatonin peak. And here, weighted blanket use seemed to be producing a well-informed, nice spike in
melatonin. Was it after a single night?
So it was just a single night, which is very impressive. Coming back to the study, I mentioned that there was one of two hormones that were changed. Gosh, I did number something. But they discovered something else in the study, and I think this is perhaps even more fascinating. They also observed that weighted blanket use was linked to a transient increase in oxytocin, which is that neurochemical that we've spoken about, a hormone that is renowned for its calming, stress-reducing properties. It's also known for its pro-social bonding, and Etty is someone who is really the world's leading expert in many areas, but in sleep and social and emotional human functioning, and knows a lot more about oxytocin than I do. But what they did find in this study was that when they used the weighted blanket, not only was there an increase in melatonin, but there was also an increase in oxytocin. And one of its things beyond helping with pro-social connecting and bonding with other human beings and across species, or I should say that other species, when it's released, produce stronger social bonding in them as well. I don't know if it actually helps bonding between species, that we bond more with our dogs with oxygen. I suspect that that's true. But anyway, coming back to it, I'm drifting. That's what they found. This suggests that perhaps the oxytocin system may be joining the sleep-regulating chorus alongside melatonin, and with oxytocin potentially interacting with what we call the stress-related axis, or it's called, the long word is called, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or the HPA axis, which is regulating stress. We know that oxytocin helps quiet down that axis of stress in the body, and that may in part be why the stress reduction occurs with the increase in oxytocin caused by the weighted blanket, which in turn removes the roadblock of stress, which we know prevents sleep. And therefore, that's the reason that people were falling asleep more quickly.
Oxytocin is also released when we hug. That touching, some of the benefits of weighted blankets has been proposed to be that feeling that someone's hugging you, that sensation of close touch. So perhaps it's all related.
I think we often forget that probably the largest organ in our body is this thing called the skin. It's a monumentally epic surface area, and it is packed full of all sorts of different sensors. And so it's this incredibly receptive device, sensitive device, that can transact all sorts of changes in the brain and the body here, it seems, by way of sleep. And so it seemed to be that perhaps the oxytocin release was calming the stress-related axis. Maybe, or maybe not. And why would I say maybe not? Well, it turns out that the researchers in the study, they measured one of the downstream consequences of the activated stress-related axis, that HPA axis, which is something called cortisol, which is a primary stress hormone. And what they found was that the marker of that stress, and one of the markers that we sometimes use too, is something called alpha amylase. And that alpha amylase can also be a marker of the sympathetic, that aggravating, activating stress-related part of the system. They actually found that there was no significant change in cortisol caused by the weighted blanket. So in other words, it suggests that weighted blankets, if they are having a calming effect that leads to a greater rapidity, a greater alacrity with which sleep arrives to your system, it seems to be happening at least independent of the mechanism of cortisol. But certainly it seems to potentially be related to the changes in these two hormones, increases in melatonin, increases in oxytocin. Did it relate to better sleep, though? That's the whole purpose. Well, this is where the study was also a little bit confusing. Confusing in the sense of the results, not how the study was done. It was elegantly, beautifully done. They found that at least the way that they measured sleep, and they used it in truth, the way that they measured sleep, they used a commercial wearable device. So not necessarily the highest grade level of sleep analysis equipment that we use at the sleep center, but it's still a very good proxy. We rely on these things. And they were using these commercially wearable devices, and using those at least, they found that that weighted blanket over time did not seem to improve gross measures of either sleep quantity or sleep efficiency, which is one of the ways that we measure sleep quality. I think that to me, it simply suggests that the blanket's influence on sleep may be a little bit more subtle than just outright gross changes in sleep quantity or quality. It may require that more sophisticated instrumentation, like brainwave recordings, to see if it enhances the depth and the electrical quality of that deep sleep that these wearables can't address. So the study wasn't entirely straightforward. I think it gives us some clues to the mechanism underlying how weighted blankets can transact these benefits that we've described for sleep. But at least in their study, healthy adults, and don't forget that the data I described earlier on was in patients who were struggling with sleep, who had insomnia, and it was in children with ADHD. So there, we definitely saw sleep improvements in sleep quantity and sleep quality. But here in healthy adults, yes, there were changes in these hormones, but there wasn't necessarily changes in sleep quantity and quality. Another reason could be not just because the recording equipment is not sensitive, but that these individuals, even though they're getting this nice additional benefit of more oxytocin and more melatonin, they're already sleeping very well. And it's a little bit like saying, well, you're at a blood oxygen saturation level of 99.8%. And I've got this new oxygen saturation machine that can boost your oxygen saturation. Well, if I'm at ceiling, if I'm already close to being maxed out, you can pump all the great oxygen up into my nasal cavity that you wish for. It's not going to change my oxygen levels that much because they're already really good. And so if their sleep is really good, how much more expectation benefit could you imagine that those weighted blankets would give you? It doesn't change the fact that they can still promote some of the chemicals that would help and maybe explain the benefits that happened in those who didn't have good sleep to begin with, those with insomnia, those with ADHD. So I do think it's still a very elegant study. And overall, to the question, to the point, Etty, and I'm trying to be quick because I know I've gone on for a long time, they do seem to have growing evidence that they are beneficial in numerous different populations, and slowly we're starting to uncover the mechanisms. Any thoughts, any ideas? What did I missed out? Have you read anything on this that could be added?
Just two thoughts. The first is, since there doesn't seem to be any negative impact on sleep, so if you want to try it out and see if it helps you, then you can go ahead and give it a try, because...
That's right. The only harm would be the money that's out your pocket.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like Peter Attia says in medicine, you know, the first question is not whether this medication is going to help you. The question is, can we make sure that this medication is at least not going to harm you? So yes, yep. Very good point. Thank you.
Oh, the second thing I just wanted to say is that as a kid...
See how you number things too? First and second.
You're not alone.
I'm so sorry. No. I think I've probably infected you with my numeric thought patterns. I'm so sorry.
I'm receiving sleep knowledge with the numbering system. There's no other way.
Oh, goodness. Sorry, to your second point.
My second point is, just when I was a kid, I used to spend weekends at my grandma, and her blanket was so heavy that I thought it's some sort of a very clever way to make sure that I don't leave the bed. I was tiny, and it was just really, I think, heavier than me. And I wonder now if she actually experimented with the weighted blanket, but back then I was just... You know, it really made me think twice before I leave the bed.
The prophetic wisdom of grandmothers should not be underestimated.
Exactly.
If there are any venture capitalists out there who are looking for genius ideas that are probably tried and true over generations,
especially
go and speak to grandmothers.
When it comes to sleep, just so many things that were just, they figured it out. Yeah.
I should do an episode on different enhancement techniques for sleep and speak about rocking, because, you know, we've been rocking children in our arms or in cradles or in mangers for eons. And it turns out there's some really interesting evidence that rocking promotes sleep, but for another episode. This, folks, again, has been a little bit longer than I had anticipated. I hope it's useful. Continue to tell us if you would prefer me not to go into great detail, prefer me to stop numbering things, or prefer that I shut up entirely and let Etty speak more dominantly. But to all of you out there, thank you for listening. And to you, Etty, for joining. You are always such a gift to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
Take care, folks. Bye for now.